KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Firestorms continue to rage in the North Bay, and at least 9 people are dead in Sonoma and Napa counties. But authorities say the number could rise. More than 1,500 homes and businesses have been destroyed there, and throughout Northern California, some 115,000 acres have burned. Coming up on Forum, we'll get the latest on the fires, the damage, and the displaced.
Somebody in the neighborhood came and was banging on my door. And I didn't know what it was. And I opened the door and she said, you know, you've got to get out of here. There's a fire.
And we want to hear your story. Call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786 or email forum at kqed.org. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. 16 fires blazing across Northern California have now left 11 people confirmed dead, the majority from Sonoma County, where much of Santa Rosa has been decimated and where more than 100 people are still reported missing. 7 people died in Sonoma County, 2 in Napa County, and 1 in Mendocino County. And as of Monday night, the fires have burned more than 100,000 acres and leveled 1,500 homes, businesses, and other structures. Governor Brown has declared a state of emergency, and locals continue to reel from the disaster, which has largely burned through Sonoma and Napa counties. One resident described it as Armageddon. And I think I speak for many of us when I say that our hearts go out to those who have suffered in this devastating loss and continue to go through it. Whole neighbors have been destroyed, and if you've seen these images, they are horrific, and also need to say something about the courage and heroic actions of people who have found strength in this and resilience. It's always amazing that people find the best in these kind of circumstances. We want to get an update first from CAL FIRE, and with us on the phone is Daniel Berlin. He's up in Sacramento. He joins us. Daniel Berlin, good to have you with us on Forum this morning. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
Can you just update us initially? Where are we right now in terms of the whole picture?
Well, the good news here is that the winds that really fanned these fires has decreased significantly. In fact, Sunday night, Monday morning, we saw winds of 50 to 60 miles an hour. Overnight, those winds died down and were very light. In fact, in some areas, they were the only winds were in the single digits. So that decrease in the winds and even the cooler temperatures has aided us in really trying to slow down these fires.
And yet they continue to burn. In great part, the emphasis continues to be on saving lives and evacuating people as opposed to necessarily going full force with the fires.
A lot of the evacuations have been completed. We've gotten a lot of those residents out of harm's way. So we are able to really kind of shift gears and begin to build and strengthen our containment lines around the fire. That's going to be key, especially with the possibility and the potential that winds pick back up later in the week. We want to make sure that we have a good line around this fire.
And we have just been informed that 2 more people, according to CAL FIRE, have been reported dead in Mendocino. Unfortunately, yesterday, when we first started talking about the fires, there were no casualties. But now it turns out that they're probably going to continue to go up because people have to be found.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, 1,500 homes and commercial structures that were destroyed, and just how quickly the fires burned into those areas. You know, the evacuations of these communities was a huge challenge. And so it is potentially likely that the number of fatalities will go up. Obviously, we're hoping that it holds at 11, but unfortunately, just because of how dynamic this fire was and how fast and destructive it was, there is the potential that number will increase.
And how many strike teams do you have out there, Cal, and CAL FIRE?
We've been bringing in hundreds of additional fire crews from across the state, from Southern California to the northern border with Oregon, all down into the North Bay area and into many of these other fires across Northern California. This is right now our top priority. Fortunately, across the nation, there's not a lot of other fire activity. So even the federal aircraft with the U.S. Forest Service have been able to be brought here into California to help us in these fires.
Can you do more from the air now? Because the smoke was so thick, it was almost impossible initially.
We're waiting to see. That was a big challenge yesterday. A lot of people wanted to know why we didn't have more aircraft. And it wasn't a fact that we needed more aircraft. It was the simple fact that the aircraft could not see the visibility because of the thick smoke just hanging over the area that had burned. We weren't able to really safely and effectively get our aircraft in there. Plus, when the winds are blowing at extreme rates, it sometimes is not even effective for fire retardant to be dropped from the air. It just dissipates before it hits the ground. That's where our ground resources in situations like that are so critical. But I know there were a number of windows of opportunity yesterday where the fixed-wing air tankers were critical in helping us slow down the fire from the air.
We have Daniel Berland on the line with us. He's with CAL FIRE. What areas presently are at risk, Daniel?
Right now, we have risks throughout the communities where these fires are burning. The Santa Rosa area, the outside Napa, the Redwood Valley up in Mendocino County. There's just too many communities, sadly, to list where there's still a threat. Evacuations still remain in effect throughout the North Bay.
What about the fire north of Ukiah up in Mendocino County?
The Redwood Complex in both Potter Valley and Redwood Valley is over 21,000 acres, multiple structures destroyed there. On that fire and actually the fire in Napa and the fire in Sonoma, we've brought in incident management teams that are a group of trained managers that are able to command major incidents like these type of wildfires. So on all of these major fires, we now have an incident management team structure to help us ensure that we have the resources we need and that we're deploying the strategies to help us slow down and stop these fires.
Are we also getting generally more information? The mayor of Santa Rosa, for example, was complaining that there just wasn't enough information coming in, and we've heard that complaint from many.
You know, in the initial stages of a major fire like this, you know, our priority is just protecting life, getting fire engines into communities that are engulfed in flames and rescuing residents trapped in their homes. But getting information out to the public is our priority. We have a lot of good information now posted on our website, on social media, as do the counties. Really, when it comes down to information versus saving lives, protecting lives has to come first. But now that we're 36 hours into these fires, that information flow starts to increase much better, and we're able to get that kind of information out to the public.
And again, Daniel Berland with us is with CAL FIRE. Do we know anything more about the causes?
We still have investigators that have been working to determine exactly how these fires sparked. These are 14 fires, 16 fires all throughout different parts of the state that all started relatively within the same time. The wind is the factor that allowed them to grow so quickly rather than be able to be contained at a smaller acreage. But most of the fires we respond to are caused somehow by the activity of people, whether that be power lines, negligence. There's a whole host of causes, and that's what our investigators are doing right now. They're working to eliminate all other potentials and narrow it down to one cause. But right now, too soon to know exactly what sparked these fires. But I want to stress, even though the winds have died down right now, conditions are still very dry across the state. And what we need from the public is their help to help prevent these type of fires from occurring in the future.
Again, Daniel Berland with us from Sacramento, and he's with CAL FIRE. Appreciate very much you being with us, Daniel. Good luck.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you for joining us. We're also joined now by Scott Stevens. He's professor of fire science at the College of Natural Resources, UC Berkeley. And Professor Stevens, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Hello.
I guess I'd like to get to possibly the origins of these fires with you. There's been a lot of speculation about wires that fell. There's questions about arson. But the weather pattern seems to be very much like the fires in the Oakland Hills from 26 years ago.
Well, I think you're very right. I think the high winds, low humidity was really similar. I think the origin is really difficult, as the CAL FIRE representative just talked about. The winds were so high, and I know that colleagues of mine up in Santa Rosa said that just the wind damage alone without fire was substantial. Trees knocked over, house pieces moved around. So it's going to take months for investigation to be conclusive. I'm sure they'll look at it very, very carefully, but it certainly wasn't lightning. So it's either going to be wind-related or something like arson. I hope it's not arson.
Well, one certainly hopes that's the case, but these winds, I mean, talk about them. They're called Los Diablos for a good reason. They're devilish.
They are. When you get those east winds that come in, northeast winds, and I think the alignment of the winds, and there's a canyon just outside Santa Rosa to the east that actually aligned, it looks like, very, very closely with the wind direction. And then those winds aligning with the canyon pushes a fire downwind, almost like a Venturi effect, blows into the edge of the city. Of course, edge of the cities are going to be vulnerable to fire, but I think the thing about this fire that surprised me is how far it penetrated really into more urban areas, and I think it happened because of the high winds, the alignment of the canyon, and then the bad conditions.
So it became so destructive principally because of the winds?
Yes, there's no doubt. Winds and humidity. You know, you move fire by spotting in those conditions where you throw embers ahead of the fire, maybe a mile or more, so the fire is able to leapfrog almost anything, including, we heard, Highway 101. So, you know, fires in those conditions really are unstoppable. You could put the U.S. Army there, and you couldn't stop a fire in those conditions.
Well, it gets into the question of how do you stop the fire? I mean, we talked a little earlier, as you perhaps heard, with Daniel Berlant of CAL FIRE, and we were talking about what has to be done perhaps more from the air and bringing in fire teams from all over. I mean, at this point, are we doing all that needs to be done, do you think?
I do. I think, you know, the fire suppression organization in the United States is the best in the world. You know, we have the incident command system. We bring resources from all over. I saw L.A. County fire trucks up in that part of the state already. So I think we're really good at that. And I don't think we even get much better. But I think what we lack is land use planning, the ability to really think about communities and risk to fire, and also what people might be able to do themselves to try to reduce their vulnerability somewhat. But the vulnerability is still going to be there.
You did some studies, I believe, in Australia, and particularly relevant to fire prevention. What can we learn from that?
Well, one thing about Australia that I think is really interesting, and they have the same fire issues that we do. They've lost so many lives just like us, houses. But one thing they've done is they've been able to engage the people that live in the urban interface much more effectively in the issues of the interface. So they become more steady partners. We have FireWise communities and things that are happening by volunteers doing very well. But I think one thing Australia's been able to do is actually make it more systematic, make it more state level. So you have maybe people talking to each other much more frequently about fire, maybe twice a year. Community fire brigades are created in Australia where people choose to actually do this as homeowners. So there's just much more engagement, I think, of understanding the risk and what might be done to try to reduce the risk but not eliminate it.
And at this point, the governor, of course, has declared these areas state of emergency. Can I get you to comment on how that helps in the wake of this kind of catastrophic fire?
What it does, I think, is it releases the ability to get different types of aid from the federal government and elsewhere, also the state. So FEMA and others are going to be able to come in now and try to help and assist people, just like they did a couple years ago with things like the Valley Fire. Unfortunately, the Valley Fire showed us a lot of people are underinsured or don't have fire insurance at all, and unfortunately, that's very difficult even for FEMA to deal with. So I'm afraid, you know, the human tragedy, as you say, is actually huge and wide-reaching.
In fact, I'm wondering, and I just said to our producers before we went on the air, how this affects the insurance industry when something this catastrophic and widespread takes place, not only people, of course, who aren't insured, but those who are because of the costs that are incurred. Can you stay with us, Professor Stevens?
Yes.
I want to go to Leslie Burnaby. She's at the evacuation center at the Marin Center in San Rafael. She evacuated from Santa Rosa. She's 16 years old. And thank you so much for joining us, Leslie Burnaby. Good to have you with us on Forum this morning.
Hi, it's good to be on here.
Yeah, tell us about your experience, your story.
It's been kind of tough, like just moving around. We first went to a Finley Community Center, which was another evacuation center. And even though we were safe there, it was just a lot of toxic air. We couldn't really even breathe, so we decided to go as far as possible, so we came here. But I don't know, it's been really helpful. Like, all the people that are here, they've just been really helpful, and it's so crazy to know that that's happening and the fires are still going on.
You're with your family?
Yes, I am.
And do you know what's happened to your house?
I still have no clue. They won't really even let us. Some of our family is still like in Monarch Park, which is close to Santa Rosa, but they still won't let them go in and look at like what's happened to our homes.
And I presume that your school is you're at the school up there that's called off classes, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, what are you doing at the evacuation center? Just waiting for word and.
I mean, yeah, they brought a lot of help here. They have a lot of food, which is really nice, and they've been as like helpful as they can be, and they're bringing like donations of food and like goods that a lot of people didn't have time to take out of their like homes. Like for our family, we only have like one or two pairs of clothing that we brought, so they've brought clothing and like sweaters if we need them and stuff.
Well, I know it's been tough, and I just wish you the best, you and your family and all those people who are with you in the evacuation center and all those other evacuation centers throughout Northern California. And thank you for joining us. I hope you come through this well.
Okay, thank you.
As well
thank
as can.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's Leslie Burnaby, and she's in the evacuation center at the Marin Center in San Rafael. We'd really like to hear your stories. I want to open the phone lines and give listeners an opportunity to let us know what they've been through here, or what they've observed, and really any kind of tips or information or help that you can provide. I mean, this is a radio station that really caters to the community and that serves you, the public. We want to hear your stories. We want to hear questions that you have and concerns in the wake of this catastrophe, and indeed want to hear your observations and what you have to report, what you've been through. Let me give you the toll-free number, and you can join us. I know cells are out throughout the area, but there are many people who do have connections and can join us by phone, or in fact are in their cars and can join us that way. Please feel free to do that right now. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in the program and do want to hear from you. Again, you can join us right now at 866-733-6786. You can also be part of this program, and we, again, want to hear your stories. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You can also go to our Facebook page. Many ways you can join the program, and indeed, we'd like to hear what you have to say. Let me go back to Scott Stevens again, who's professor of fire science at the College of Natural Resources at UC Berkeley. Talk, if you would, about the role of power lines in all this, because we've been hearing so much along those lines, Scott Stevens.
Well, it's true. You know, power lines, of course, are throughout the entire state. They go through wildlands, and they are potentially ignition sources because mostly branches and other material can hit them, causing arcing, causing materials to fall on the ground. And people like PG&E really know this, and they invest a great deal of resources in people that are actually out there monitoring the lines, clearing the lines, taking trees down. It's something that you see all the time when you go up in these regions. So I know that they take it seriously, but they are really vulnerable to high winds and the ability to start a fire.
And a listener wants to know, if the fires are jumping unpredictably over ridges and through neighborhoods, shouldn't broad areas be evacuated?
Well, that's one thing that CAL FIRE and others do. They'll actually, their incident command team will think about areas and model the fire and look at the winds, look at the forecast, and make the best decisions they can in trying to get people out of harm's way. And, of course, they do as good a job as possible, but the initial part of that fire was so ferocious and so fast, they didn't have a chance to do that. That was really the individuals that are in their own communities talking to one another, waking each other up, saying, you got to get out of here, get out of here, because there really isn't time in those kind of conditions for even an evacuation plan to be executed.
Another listener question, not sure this falls into your arena of study, but Evelyn wants to know, with every disaster we lose cell service, was the emergency broadcasting system used? Does that system break into satellite radio and TV? How can we better prepare to maintain communications?
Well, you're right about, you know, cell phones are wonderful, but they also have vulnerabilities too. So I do think that those systems do come online, but I think, again, it's so difficult. Even in Australia, where they've had similar issues of huge fires burning, some folks will actually be on their cell phone or on their computer terminal waiting for someone like a fire service to tell them what to do, whereas some cases you have to make the assessment of yourself and actually do what you think is best, because you're not going to have time to get a service call in because it's so fast. That's one reason I think that getting more connected to communities in these areas, learning more about the risk and actually having more discussions, and I think it'd do it systematically, maybe even through the University of California Extension. It's done right now in pieces, but I'm afraid we could do better with the communications and actually do it more effectively.
Scott Stevens, grateful for your time. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
I was happy to.
Scott Stevens, again, is professor of fire science at the College of Natural Resources at UC Berkeley. We're going to go now to Tom Flanagan, who's public information officer with the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. And good to have you, Tom Flanagan. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. There's a smoke advisory now. People should stay inside, really, shouldn't they?
That's right. If they are smelling smoke, they should limit their activities outdoors altogether. We are seeing very high numbers. In fact, some of the highest numbers we've ever seen in terms of poor air quality here in the Bay Area, especially in the North Bay near the fires, but also even high numbers here in San Francisco where we are. into the East Bay as well. We have variable winds in the area, and that's pushing the smoke into different parts of the Bay Area. So we're going to continue to see conditions shift throughout the day as we start to get that sea breeze picking up in the next few hours.
Well, the advisory here is to stay inside, really close windows and doors. Turn on air conditioning if you have it, yes?
Yeah, if you have air conditioning, first and foremost, you want to make sure that you can switch it to recirculate. You don't want to be bringing in that smoky air from outdoors. You want to cut off that ability to bring in that smoke and just have it recirculate the air inside so you can stay, you can keep the air indoors healthy to breathe. So, closing doors, closing windows, though, if you don't have air conditioning, that's a good approach. And for those who are particularly susceptible, the elderly, the young, anyone with a respiratory condition, if they are feeling the impacts of the smoke, they can put masks on, but they should seek help from their medical professional.
Yeah, I was going to ask you specifically about that, especially those with asthma, emphysema, or COPD, the chronic disruptive pulmonary disease. Any specific kind of mask that really is useful here or that is necessary or that you advise?
Yeah, so they're recommending these N95 masks, and they remove about 95% of the particulate, so you'll want to affix that to your face and continue to wear it if you're experiencing some, you know, pretty severe conditions and finding it very difficult to breathe. Also, for your air conditioners inside your house, you know, there are filters on them, but ideally we want to see the MERV 24. That's what they call them at centers where you can buy them, like Home Depot or something. So that's MRV 24.
And what about should people really be keeping their kids inside in, for example, San Francisco or the East Bay if the kids don't have a respiratory condition?
Well, like I said, I think it's going to vary from person to person. So we want people to make that individual assessment. If you're feeling the effects of the smoke and you're finding it hard to breathe, if you have children, for example, or the elderly, or anyone who has a respiratory condition, they should definitely stay indoors and exercise caution. And if they're finding it very difficult to breathe, anyone who suffers from asthma, emphysema, COPD, the smoke irritates our eyes, our airways, causing coughing potentially and a scratchy throat, irritated sinuses. If you're experiencing those things, you'll definitely want to stay indoors, close those windows, and potentially, seek medical attention if you're finding it very difficult to breathe.
Well, let me thank you for joining us again. That's Tom Flanagan. He's Public Information Officer of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. Can you give out your sometimes difficult website?
Right? It is difficult. So it's BAAQMD. Those are the initials of Bay Area Air Quality Management District. Also, you can go to Air Now for the San Francisco Bay Area to see hourly visual maps of the air quality in our region.
And again, many thanks, Tom. Tom Flanagan, spokesperson for the Air District. When we come back, we'll hear some of your stories. We'll also hear more updates. We're going to continue to cover the wildfire ravage in Northern California. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the devastating fires in Napa, Sonoma, Santa Rosa up in Northern California, and also the devastation and what can be done and what is being done. And we're updating you. And we want to bring our own Mina Kim in, who's a reporter with KQED News, also host of Forum on Friday. She's in the city of Napa. Welcome, Nina.
Hi, Michael.
You went to the Sheriff's Department earlier today and got a rundown of things there. Can you update us?
Yes. Actually, the update is still going on right now, but I got quite a bit of information that I wanted to share with our listeners. Basically, CAL FIRE Chief Bierman said that the fires are still actively growing and that they are still experiencing additional structural losses, and they would really like people to please avoid the area and avoid, you know, entering any evacuation zones whatsoever, because they're still in a safety and rescue mode. They're still trying to save lives. This is still not a fire where they are focusing their energies on controlling the fire as much as they are still working on evacuation. So it remains a safety operation still at this point. They're also asking people to please not use any kind of drones because that is interrupting aircraft that are trying to get to these fires. They said that crews are out there. They're on their third. Don't have quite enough reinforcement to deal with this actively growing fire. Even though all around me, I have to say, wherever I drive, there are a lot of different fire agencies from across the state and our region. I drove by Cal OES trucks and Oakland Fire Department trucks on my way to the press conference alone. But all of this mutual aid is still not enough to at least relieve some of these firefighters who've been out on the line.
Seeing a lot more action in the air. We were talking about that earlier. I mean, the smoke has cleared somewhat, so we're getting more help in terms of aerial enforcements.
Yes, well, for us here in Napa, it's a very overcast day, but the smoke smell is more intense, so it's hard to distinguish whether or not the smoke has just sort of settled on the valley or whether or not it's just a condition of the weather as well. But I can tell you that people are feeling more of the effects of inhaling this kind of dirty air with a lot of particulate matter in it. My own throat has gotten a lot more scratchy, and I've been coughing a lot more since yesterday. And, you know, it's hard because people are seeing at different times based on any way that the wind might shift, right? They're seeing conditions change, so they might start to see more smoke in one area than they expected. Or I saw some flames last night from a ridge about 1 to 2 miles from our home. But because of the lack of connectivity, we're not able to find out whether or not what exactly is happening. There is still little to no cell phone access in this area. Where I live in the northern end of the city of Napa, it's still without power. And so today, Senator Bill Dodd said that he is talking with Cal OES, and they said that they're going to try to improve connectivity today. They're asking people to register that they're okay if they can at safeandwell.org, because folks here, the officials here are hearing from family members who are concerned that they're still not able to reach their loved ones because of the connectivity issues. They're also asking people to register at shelters so that they can try to get information out to people. And I've also learned that Comcast is setting up complimentary Wi-Fi hotspots in all the different zip codes in our area so that people can go there and tap into a hotspot network to try and reach people, and they'll be them know the locations and determining those locations today.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned, though, I'm sorry you're suffering from particulate matter, because we spoke before we went to the break with the public information officer of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, and I know it's increased. That is, particulate matter has increased, and that is also of real concern. Can you say anything to people? We're getting a lot of people who want to know how can they help and how can they volunteer and what can they do?
You know, that didn't actually come up at this particular press conference, but I do know that evacuation centers, there are three main ones here in Napa, are engaging volunteers and getting help. And those are, of course, at Crosswalk Community Church, Napa Valley College, and also at the Calistoga Fairgrounds. Last night, Crosswalk Community Church had 30 people stay overnight, and the Napa Valley College gym had 100 people stay overnight. And, you know, around us, one of the fires that's still going is the Atlas Fire that's burned 25,000 acres. Alfredo Pedroza, the member of the Board of Supervisors here in Napa, said that there is no containment at all of that particular fire. And that's the one that's about 5 miles from me, about 2 miles to my west. The Partrick Fire, that's at about 1,000 acres, and that also has had zero containment. And Diane Dillon, the supervisor for the Calistoga area, said that the Tubbs Fire has not increased in size, so that's really good news, but there are still road closures there, though they have been able to restore power to the city of Calistoga, so that's a big deal.
And is anybody talking about burying power lines underground, or is it a little maybe too premature for that? I mean, we're getting a lot of questions about that.
You know, they haven't talked about that, but they did talk about the volatility of the power lines still, especially in the areas that are within the evacuation zones. And they're telling people that, you know, part of the reason that they're not allowing people back in evacuation zones, even if it feels like the flames are no longer there and there's not as much smoke there, is that crews need to go through those areas to secure utilities and gas lines, ensure no more trees fall, no more power lines go down. So that's been, you know, that's all they said related to power lines. But also on the question of power, I've been without power, and I haven't had power since 2 a.m. yesterday. I've been very afraid to open my refrigerator. but they were saying that PG&E has informed the emergency officials here that they are, you know, starting the progress of restoring power to the parts of Napa that that are still without it. They understand that people want to, you know, be able to connect to Wi-Fi and electricity, but that all they could really say was that it was in progress today and that they hope to have it as soon as possible. So I'm not so sure I'm going to have power today at all.
Well, I hope you do, and I hope the particulate matter decreases so you can stop coughing. And thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Michael.
Mina Kim, reporter with KQED News. She's in the city of Napa. We're going to go to some callers here, and let's find out what your stories are. We've asked how the fires have affected you and kind of questions that you have and concerns that you have. Let me start with a caller from Oakland. Adam, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. I'm calling from Oakland, but I live up in Glen Ellyn. And I just want to tell you a little bit about what happened to me on Sunday night. It's about 10:30, 11 o'clock. I started to smell smoke. And I live in the Sonoma Valley. I looked out across the valley, and I saw the flames coming over the hill opposite Highway 12, opposite side of Highway 12. And it was red, glowing, blue flame, serious, fast-moving fire. I said to my son, let's get out of here. Grabbed our dog and cat. It was in 5 minutes. We were in the car, had no gas, so I headed down to Sonoma, and the winds were insane. The trees were like blowing sideways across the road. Branches were everywhere. It was like driving on an obstacle course, and there were sparks in the air. And as soon as we got down to Sonoma, I looked to the hills southeast of where we were, and I saw the fire was all over in those hills, huge fire. So we didn't know where we could go. We thought, okay, let's go to my son's ex-mom's house, my ex's house, his mom's house in Santa Rosa, so we can be safe. But we were afraid to drive back on Highway 12, so we drove all the way down to 116 Petaluma, came around on Highway 101, and as you look to the east, you could see the entire horizon on fire. And we got up to Santa Rosa in the Piner area, and went into her house, and it was smoky, but it seemed like we were safe. Within about an hour, I said to my son, it's getting really smoky in here. And I stepped outside, and it was like walk into the apocalypse. You couldn't see the ground. You could not see your hands in front of your face. There was so much debris and ash, and it was asphyxiating. So I said, okay, we're getting out of here, and we're headed to the ocean. So we once again evacuated, got the animals into the car, and
what did you have? Dogs, cats?
A dog, and a cat.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, I had talked about them earlier on the perspective that was on this morning, because I had a much less dramatic episode with fire up in Glen Ellyn a couple of months back, and we had nothing but the clothes on our back and the animals, and we started to drive out to the coast, looping through roads because there were lots of people who were trying to evacuate then. When we evacuated the second house in Santa Rosa, people were running down the street like, I can't even describe, it was like from some movie, this scene. Like ash was everywhere, and people were saying, the fire is two doors down, it's two doors down. And we got into the car, got out of there, drove to the western part of Sebastopol and parked the car and spent the night trying to sleep, not sleeping much, in the car. And it turned out that, and then we went to the coast, and there was smoke all along the coast. I came to my friend's house in Oakland, and I went via Point Reyes. So I drove all the way down the coast to come through back in. Back
Let me cut to the chase here, because you've been through quite an odyssey.
I'm sorry.
No, it's amazing, the story. I mean, just trying to follow the map that you've been through, like a GPS in my head.
I'll get to the amazing part.
Well, you're safe now, though, right? You're safe in Oakland?
Yeah. I just found out that my house in Glen Ellyn is still standing, even though all of the houses around it are completely gone.
Wow.
And I've, and my ex-wife's house in Santa Rosa is completely gone.
Wow.
So well, my son, almost all of his friends' house are completely gone. We know at least 20 people who have nothing left.
I'm glad you're safe, and I'm glad your animals and your son are safe, and I thank you for giving us that narrative of your struggle, and I wish you the best, and thank you for the call. Like I said, we want to hear some of your stories here. Let me get Max on next. Max, you're on.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Join us.
First of all, I wanted to say I appreciate you guys' coverage of this. I live in San Francisco, and it's been very difficult to get accurate news about what's going on. I was born and raised in Petaluma, and I just wanted to say the amount that the community there has come together to offer what they have, whether it be horse trailers, places for livestock, places for people, volunteering their time to help people kind of just rebuild what they can for the time being, I think is something really special, and I think speaks volumes about the community that Sonoma County has, and I'm really proud to be from there, and I just wanted to say thank you to everyone volunteering in Petaluma and offering what little or whatever they have to anyone that they can.
Okay, and let me thank you for the call and wish you the best. Neil LaRue is on the phone, and let me go to him. He's assistant professor in the Department of Meteorology and Climate Science at San Jose State University. He's part of the fire weather research team, and Professor LaRue, good to have you aboard here. Welcome.
Sure, thanks for having me on.
Can you basically talk about what you see as the weather coming up in the next couple of days? Be a meteorologist for us or a predictor?
Yeah, sure. First, the good news is those really strong northeast winds that were producing those 60 to 70 mile an hour gusts have concluded. And so that real extreme fire spread rate associated with that is dying down. But we do have another weather system coming into the area starting this afternoon. And so that's first going to generate some southwesterly winds, which will push the fires back to the east a little bit, maybe open up another flank of the fires. That will be associated with some higher humidity air, though, so that will tamp down some of the fire conditions. But then on Wednesday, we're going to have a wind shift, and the winds are going to come around to the northwest again. And so that may open up yet another flank of the fire. And so these shifting winds can really change the direction that the fire is moving. First southwest winds today, then northwest winds on Wednesday. So something to keep an eye on there.
Well, there's also keeping an eye on what I had mentioned before, that the weather patterns are very similar to what happened up in the Oakland Hills 26 years ago, and there's clean ocean air that's moving in. What does that mean?
You're definitely right, and I think Scott Stevens hit it earlier. Those Diablo winds, the northeast winds, very similar to what we saw during the Oakland Hills fires, and that generates that offshore flow, strong downsloping winds, which can drive the fire off of the terrain down into the towns like we saw in Santa Rosa. Whereas, when we get the onshore flow, the more of the pristine ocean air, it's relatively higher humidity levels. And you can still have some pretty strong flows, but with the higher humidity, it reduces some of the fire spread rates.
So the outlook, at least for the time being, is at least fairly comforting, but what you're saying about Wednesday does raise some real concerns here.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we're not going to be seeing winds nearly as extreme as we saw overnight Sunday into Monday, where we had those 60 to 70 mile an hour gusts, but we could see wind gusts in the kind of 20 to 30 mile an hour range. And from a fire perspective, that's still pretty problematic. And whenever you have this much fire on the ground, this many active flanks of the fire, all of those open flanks are potential growth regions. So getting, a 90-degree wind shift, suddenly your fire starts moving in a different direction. So there's certainly a lot of work to be done by the firefighting crews between now and when those wind shifts occur, and hopefully getting out in front of that. But we may not be completely out of the woods yet when it comes to this. But certainly the truly extreme fire growth that we saw with those Diablo winds, the northeast winds, has concluded at this point.
Let me, Neil LaRue, you can spend with us some more time with us, I hope?
Yeah, sure.
Stay on the line. I want to go to more of our callers. Before I go to callers, read some concerns that listeners are raising. Lisa writes, as a Sonoma County resident, I echo concerns that there has been very little solid information on the current status of the fire and up-to-date maps about evacuation and potential evacuation areas. The Sonoma County website is sorely lacking as an information resource, especially for unincorporated areas. I pay taxes, and I would hope they would help provide information services. David writes, news photos show us many gas lines with flames continuing to burn. Why doesn't PG&E have more automatic shutoff valves to turn off gas to areas that have burned? Let me actually bring a caller in here, and that's Alex. Alex, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your program. I was in Lowell Valley Road in Sonoma yesterday at my sister's vineyard. When we showed up, we had brush fires and we had fires into the trees. But we were able to control the fire. It took us 4 hours, and we had to assemble 5-6 hoses in line to get the hose long enough to be able to put out some of the fire, some of the trees. And it took us a while, but we were able to do it. And I think there's a lot that people can do on their own to an extent, especially because the fire department, I think, is completely overwhelmed. There's almost no, I mean, where we were, there was fire department help didn't even exist. You're pretty much on your own. When you have fires this big, I think the fire department is completely overwhelmed, so that, you know, you have to figure out yourself if there's anything you can do. And also having preventive measures, I think, would be pretty much the only way to survive. And the other thing is, just wanted to echo some of the comments that I heard earlier. There's completely lack of information. Even the fire department doesn't know what's going on. People, the firefighters, I don't know how well they're communicating with each other, let alone the public. So, I mean, it's completely overwhelming. And when you're in it, you realize that you're pretty much on your own. And if the fire wants to burn the house down, it will burn the house down. There's nothing you can do.
Well, Alex, I thank you for that call. And you're right, fire doesn't stop until it's put a stop to, or until it's stopped by those who have the resources to stop it. I'm wondering now, since many of you are concerned about what you can do, if we can find out perhaps some answers to those questions. It was just raised by the last caller. In fact, Lainey Hendricks is a spokesperson for the Marin Office of Emergency Services. Let's have her on the line now. Lainey Hendricks, welcome to Forum. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Yeah, well, you just heard the last caller, I hope, who was saying, you know, firefighters need more help. People have been saying, can we volunteer to help fight the fires? Can we go up there if I'm a cook or if I have a way of providing shelter for people? What can I do? Over and over again, we're hearing that. What can you tell people?
Absolutely, and I can tell you from the get-go here that we have just been blown away by the generosity, not only here in Marin County, but across the Bay Area. You know, what we need right now is for people to at least go through verified volunteer networks. And so here in Marin and also with the Napa County, we work with the Center for Volunteer and Nonprofit Leadership to help organize our volunteers. And we're asking that all volunteers either call the center to sign up or to sign up online at volunteer.cvnl.org first. Don't just voluntarily show up at an evacuation shelter or another site without signing up first, and that's because we need the personnel on the ground there to focus on the task at hand, whether that be preparing and serving meals or assisting with the needs of the evacuees in these shelters.
Lainey, forgive me, could you give that one more time?
Sure, no problem. The Center for Volunteer and Nonprofit Leadership's website is volunteer.cvnl.org.
And we have links to articles on how you can help on our website. Go to kqed.org/forum. Lainey Hendricks, what about people who are offering their homes or places at least for those who are evacuating to stay?
Yeah, we're looking into options on that right now. At the moment, I know that Airbnb has offered to help organize that in terms of people that who have available homes or rooms, as well as connecting them with evacuees. So that's the best and quickest resource to utilize. And as other possibilities and options come available, we will certainly publicize that information.
And I appreciate very much your being with us. Again, that's Lainey Hendricks. She's spokesperson with the Marin Office of Emergency Services. And again, we have links of articles on how to help on our website, kqed.org/forum. And let me go to more of your calls. Let me go to your calls. Let me go Mike next. Mike, are you there? I'm sorry. It's Robin. Go ahead, Robin.
Yes. I'm a lead for the Blue Rock Neighborhood Response Group here in Larkspur. And what I would like would be if the Office of Emergency Services person could address for people who are somewhat rattled in the Bay Area or anywhere in Northern California, and to suggest to tell them what they should do right now to prepare. You know, it's quite surprising to see that Santa Rosa has sustained damage.
All right, Lainey, so we still have you on the line here.
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah. So you heard. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Robin. Your question.
What should people do right now? They haven't. If there's not fire in your area, what do you need to know to be prepared to leave? And so what do you need to do before you in order to evacuate? Where are you going to go? What are you going to take? And do encourage people to make a 10-minute checklist of what if you've got 10 minutes before you leave, what are you going to put in your backpack, and is it already packed right now?
It's a good, important question, Robin. Thank you for it, Lainey.
It really is a great question. Thanks for bringing that up. So a lot of people have prepared an evacuation kit or an emergency kit at home. That's something to think about. If you do already have that, things to consider would be, you know, a change of clothing, what you might need in the next 24 to 48 hours, if that includes any necessary medication, inhalers, things like that. Before you evacuate, though, be sure to get information from verified sources. That's something that we've had a bit of an issue with in terms of do I evacuate, do I not. Certainly watch for updates from news media, whether it's television or radio, such as KQED, but also verify with your county or city government. Most are tweeting updates quite frequently. If you're on Twitter, they're also utilizing mediums such as Facebook, county or city websites, and Nextdoor posts. So certainly keep touch online with updates on if your neighborhood is indeed evacuated, and with that, available evacuation shelters that you may seek out. One last resource that a number of counties are utilizing, including here in Marin, is the opportunity to call 211 for updated information on available evacuation sites and just general information about the evacuation. We're asking the public to not call 911 unless, of course, it is a life-threatening emergency. So for those that are just curious about evacuating in general, 211 or your city or county's webpage or social media channels is the best source of information.
And let me thank Robin for bringing that question and you for answering it, Lainey Hendricks. In fact, Mark writes, and I want to bring this up because he adds to that. He says, I live in Oakland. The city has emergency preparedness program called CORE. The main thing it tells you to do is, one, be prepared. Keep water and food on hand and gas in your car. Two, establish an emergency contact that isn't anywhere near you in case there's an earthquake or fire or other emergency. And there are a few basic things people can do. It won't stop disasters, but it will provide the basics if you need to get away. And Neil LaRue, if I can go back to you again, Neil LaRue is with the Department of Meteorology and Climate Science at San Jose State. Candace asks, do the fires in Sonoma and Santa Rosa place communities in the East Bay Hills at risk? How far can embers travel on the wind?
Oh, that's a great question. And it's actually pretty disturbing how far the embers can go. You can see spotting multiple miles in front of fires sometimes. In fact, there's some evidence that some of the fires started last night, including the 37 fire and maybe even the Patrick fire, just downwind of the Atlas fire, may have seen spotting distances of up to 9 miles. So it makes it, you know, extremely dangerous, both for the firefighters and people trying to escape from these fires. Extremely unpredictable fire growth, and very hard for the firefighters to get out in front of a fire that's doing that kind of leapfrogging behavior. But certainly 1 mile spotting distances can happen pretty regularly with these. And when we see these extreme winds, you can see that distance extend out to those multiple mile sort of ranges.
And Mike from Roseville has another question about the wind. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Mike. I want to introduce the question of building in the wildland urban interface, which is a major cause of the fires. We've had plenty of warning about this, of course. In 2014, the King Fire in El Dorado County jumped 17 miles and threatened places as far north as Squaw Valley, Powell City, and so forth. Well, we do sometimes hear about this. State Fire Marshal Hoover, 2 years ago, talked about we have to pay attention to where we build and what we're building out there. This is a problem. Our Planning Commission and our Board of Supervisors in Placer County could not care less. CAL FIRE regulates conversion of forests to other uses, except they have a regulation that exempts new subdivisions. The Boys Fire that burned through part of Weed showed how fire can spread through these through communities like this. The legislature is a problem. They have started to pay attention and the Board of Forestry to look at planning and safety in very high fire hazard severity areas. But
let me jump in here because we're running very short on time, and I want Neil to respond to that if you could. Neil, yeah. I mean, how does this all play a role?
Yeah, no, I mean it plays a huge role here. That urban wildland interface. You know, most fires are going to burn uphill under typical conditions and usually burn then away from development patterns up toward the ridgeline. But when you get these strong downsloping winds, which actually blows the fire off of the ridges and down into town, you get these somewhat atypical conditions that seem to catch people off guard. But they happen almost every year, and they really put those communities right up on the fringes in an extremely vulnerable situation.
No, excuse me, we got seconds left. I wanted to ask Lainey if I could. Is there a current map of areas that have been evacuated? Where should people go to find out that information, Lainey Hendricks?
Again, if you look at your county, respective county, whether that's Marin, Sonoma, or Napa, and now Solano, their county website or city website, they are providing links to show the evacuation areas as well as centers that people can go to.
All right, we've had concerns about the Sonoma website, but we'll hope that they will get on top of that. Thank you, Lainey Hendricks. Thank you, Neil LaRue. Thanks to everybody who joined us, including you, our listeners. Appreciate hearing from you and your stories, and may things turn for the better much more up in the North Countries. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.